Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net. On behalf of our family of hosts, staff, and the millions of listeners who have tuned in since 2009, we want to wish you happy holidays and ask for your support as we launch our daily in-house news coverage. Please consider making us a part of your end-of-year giving in 2013. Your membership donation is tax deductible and the best way to show you believe in our work and the importance of a free, food-focused media resource. Consider donating today at heritageradionetwork.org by clicking the donate button. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
Episode 93 of The Morning After. I am Jesse Kiefer.
I am Sari Gaiman.
Sari, a huge milestone has passed in the season, and I'm glad it passed me by without seeing any of it.
No carnage.
No carnage, no vomit, no urine. It was SantaCon.
I'm so sorry I missed it.
Well, there's been, you know, as a bar and restaurant boss, the idea of Santa-clad bros coming in and drinking to the point of pissing themselves, you know, that is awful. I can't understand that. It's completely not in the Christmas spirit.
Yeah, it's true. Except I was planning on meeting my future ex-husband there. But I couldn't go out.
So did you see any Santas yesterday?
I mean, only everywhere you look, everywhere. Not real Santas. Just things with Santa hats.
So you actually were in the midst of it?
No, not at all. I'm just saying, my neighborhood, Carroll Gardens, is heavily decorated. It's like...
Ah, okay.
It's a very kind of old Italian Brooklyn neighborhood, and it's like every house or apartment is competing against the next.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds like the spirit of Christmas.
Right. I mean, they're not drunk. Yeah.
Documented in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's like full-on spirit there.
But for those of you out there who have never heard of SantaCon, it's basically like this bar crawl of people dressed as Santa.
There was some controversy this year. I heard there was it was banned from certain places.
Places in so I just moved from the East Village, where their starting point was Tompkins Square Park. I lived like steps away,
which is perfect because, you know, drunk people pissing is, you know, just par for the course.
I mean, truly kind of is, but now it's getting all bougie over there, which is why I had to move.
The crackheads will always be.
The crackheads will always be there.
They've survived this long.
But, you know, it's a lot of bars were putting up, you know, signs saying, like, no SantaCon, and we're not sorry, basically.
No,
we're not sorry to disappoint you.
Yeah, and I heard Metro North banned them as well, because I think it was formerly a tradition that they would be, like, boozing on the train, which I guess is legal. Or no, maybe it's the LIRR. I don't know.
You can't. I'm pretty sure you can drink on Metro North. I remember when I went to Stone Barns for the first time, Blue Hill at Stone Barns. I had a beer on the way up.
Oh, which good for you. That sounds nice.
I felt very Mad Men.
Yeah,
felt very fancy.
Yeah. So I think that they were blocked, and that was like their normal, you know, mode of transportation, starting off or something.
I have truly heard arguments from other people saying, like, you know, it's all in fun, and, you know, it's the Christmas spirit. And,
yeah.
I just,
you know, in the words of Ron Burgundy, away. Let's just keep it classy. Let's have a Mad Men Christmas, okay?
And fuck you, San Diego. Right? Isn't that what he says at the end? Anyway.
Sort of my hometown, but I'll let that slide.
Well.
Not my hometown, really.
You know, your family lives in
they
San
do
Diego.
Live there, yeah.
That movie is pure broadcast journalism genius.
Absolutely.
It's totally real.
I can't wait for the next one to come out.
Speaking of the next one, Queens.
Yes.
You know, this borough.
The next borough.
It's the next borough. No, truly, obviously, Queens has been around for a very, very, very long time.
Longer than you or I.
No, that's for sure.
In fact.
And we're old.
Yeah.
but, you know, it's a borough that I truly have not explored. I've lived in New York City for 7 years now, and I would call myself someone who is out and about in the culinary food and beverage scene, and I really don't get on trains to Queens.
Mm-mm. It's definitely the road less traveled.
I've said this for years, and it's getting old, but I've only been to Queens by accident.
Mm.
you know, you got on the 7 train, or, well, no, the 7 train is pretty obvious that you're going to Queens. I got on, like, the N in the wrong direction.
I made that mistake, too.
And I'm all of a sudden going over a bridge, and then I don't know where I am, and I don't know where to get off, and I don't know if I got on the bridge to go to Brooklyn or to Queens or what happened.
It's overwhelming. At least there's dumplings.
Well, luckily, we have someone here who is going to make it all better. We have the very talented Natasha Pogrebinski. She's the chef at Bear in Long Island City. Welcome to The Morning After.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm from Queens, from the next borough, from 7 feet from the future.
The future. In the future, borough. SantaCon hasn't happened yet.
I believe that. It definitely hadn't happened in Greenpoint, where I was earlier or yesterday. But we're gonna talk with her. We're going to talk about Bear. We're going to talk about how she got to the U.S. and about her food mantra. Eastern European cuisine. I don't know a ton about that, and maybe it's because I haven't been to Queens or something like that.
Or Cleveland. Which is another place that Natasha's from. Yep. And I am too.
In addition to Bear Restaurant in Queens, we are also visiting a Yelp review that was sent to us by the lovely Anne Saxelby with The Morning After in mind, because we do these dramatic narrative readings. Mm-hmm. That are truly, truly progressive.
Wow. Yeah, well, I tweeted that we've scraped the bowels of Yelp for this one.
And that's pretty low.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Yelp can be helpful for some people, but at the end of the day, people only go on there to write a glowing review or a negative review, and there doesn't ever seem to be anything in between, or they go on like this person, who visited Pan d'Avignon Wholesale Bakery in Long Island City. And she's obviously an aspiring travel writer or food writer.
Yeah.
And really, really wanted to create the scene for us, almost so that we can smell the loaves.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, do we have any magical, mystical music for this Yelp review reading? Read by the lovely Sari Kamen.
I was about a block away from the factory when the smell of sweet, fresh bread came on my radar. I stopped and stood for a minute in the middle of the street, taking it in. Looking around, there wasn't a factory or even a bakery in sight. There were apartment complexes, a few houses, and a warehouse that doesn't seem to be food-related. It was hot and humid in the mid-afternoon, but something was relaxing about the area, and I didn't know whether to contribute it to the neighborhood or whether it was a mirage. Upon opening the doors to the factory, a fragrant burst of freshly baked bread billowed out. I smiled immediately and walked upstairs to greet Chris, JHS Mamie Faye Academy 122. He introduced me to everyone in the offices, as well as introducing me to Joanne, who is in charge of sales. We chatted for a bit while we waited for my friend Dana. And that was when the fun began. We donned plastic caps and headed down to the production floor. The ground floor was bustling. Even though they had already finished with the day's production, the factory was extremely clean, and the staff of bakers just started kneading new doughs. They looked up as we walked downstairs and smiled. Chris led us to a few of the stacks of baked bread that they had left from the morning bake and described each and every one of them. I was so excited that I took a thin, olive-strewn baguette and broke it in half. The exterior made a crisp sound as I tore the bread. I thoroughly enjoy breads with nice crusts, and this was no exception. I took a bite. Delicious! Flavorful and full-bodied. There was a burst of olive fragrance when I broke the bread, which meant that the olives were fresh! I savored the bite and we went to town. They usually gave extra, fresh breads to charities, such as City Harvest. While perusing through the shelves of fresh bread, Dana and I glossed over many different variants of baguettes. Dinner rolls, brioche, large rounds, semolina-based rolls, cranberry and pecan loaves, croissants, and olive-strewn breads. Most were medium-bodied and very textured, no doubt from the extra yeast that they use in their recipes, as well as the special flours that are shipped in especially for the company. We then went upstairs and chatted with the owner and a few of the other staff for a bit. Extremely down-to-earth and very nice people. We took a few shots with the bread for fun, and then were given the option to take some bread home. It was amazing. I actually ended up giving some to a few restaurant owner friends, family, and some to charity. Everyone raved. Long story short, as I sat on the bus for a short ride home, a woman sitting a few seats away asked me what I had in my brown shopping bag. Bread, I said. It smells delicious. I can smell it from my seat. Which bakery is it? Pain d'Avignon. Many restaurants carry them. You can go to the Plaza Hotel food court or the Essex Street Market, I replied. Oh, thank you. I will definitely find them. It smells so good. This was my 100th review. Thank you.
That was amazing.
I'm thinking that this is a woman who just quit her paleo diet and is having this kind of like gluten orgy at the Pain d'Avignon
bakery. It
was definitely
orgasmic.
It's very fantastic reading, Sari.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to take a break here on The Morning After. We're going to come back with Chef Natasha Porgabinski of Bear in Queens.
It's going to be nothing like what just happened.
Or not.
Yelp out.
You are listening to Lung by Iggy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. This community-oriented company was built on a vision of providing ecologically responsible and ethically produced food to area consumers. During a typical week at the Regional Access warehouse, they help move thousands of pounds of natural and grass-fed meat, gallons of farm-fresh dairy, and tons of organic and specialty foods from producer to market. Having been in the distribution business for almost 25 years, Regional Access's experience and knowledge make them uniquely equipped to build out their region's food web. Up in the Finger Lakes, Regional Access will continue to champion the region's bounty and work toward a sustainable food system for the entire Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
And we're back here on The Morning After. As I said earlier, I have not truly explored the borough of Queens, and I remember when people were talking about Brooklyn as, you know, being this huge place for fine dining food, for really, really delicious things. It's not just Manhattan, it's not just Brooklyn, it's also Queens, and Natasha Porgabinski is certainly a part of that right now with her restaurant Bear in Long Island City.
Yep.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So thank you. Bear is correct me if I'm wrong, but it's Eastern European cuisine.
It is, yeah.
And yeah, you're not someone who just, you know, many chefs have traveled to, you know, to Japan, to Thailand, to France, and they're from the U.S. and they come here to kind of put their version of that food. You're actually from Ukraine.
Right, yeah. I was born in Ukraine, and so I grew up kind of, you know, I was about like 10 years old when I left. But I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, which is a very Eastern European culture there. And my parents always insisted on, you know, cooking like our type of food. So I grew up kind of, you know, always having, you know, herring and borscht and boiled potatoes and like very Russian and Ukrainian food. And I love it. you know. And so for me, it's not just you know, it's not the type of cuisine that I'm cooking. It's my cooking. Like, this is what I know is delicious, and I want you to fall in love with it too.
So, growing up, you were growing up in Ukraine before you moved to Cleveland, when it was part of the former Soviet Union.
Right.
What was life like then?
You know, I mean, it was kind of pretty awesome. my father's an artist, so we lived like right in the center of town, right across from a beautiful like farmer's market, which is one of the oldest and largest farmer's markets in Eastern Europe. And I just remember, like, if we had to go shop for like dinner, we'd go to the market and get the fresh produce, and we'd pick out like the sauerkraut from the barrels and have to like taste, you know, all the different choices. And then for bread, we'd have to go to a bakery across town, and for butter, go to a dairy store, and they would like cut butter from a giant slab, you know. So like all like the food was just, it was definitely all like organic and, you know, handmade, everything. So just the smells were so inspiring. And even though like I was pretty young, like that's still with me. Like that's stuck, and I just still like remember those smells and flavors. But I mean, it was very Soviet, you know. Like we were there for the May Day parade with the tanks rolling down the streets, and you know, I had to be initiated into the young what was it called? It was like the Young Pioneers, and so it was definitely very like Soviet. We had to like hide under the desks for like threat of nuclear bomb or whatever.
My eyes are bulging.
Yeah. But you know, other than that, it was a pretty normal childhood. But up until a point where we had to escape, then that was very traumatic.
So when you had to escape, I think it was in 1991, read, and you were granted political asylum in the U.S. Did you understand that you needed to escape, or did you feel like it was just something your parents were making you do?
No, I understood, because we had to escape, so we couldn't tell anybody else. So our parents set us down. And said, you know, this is what's happening. We're going to tell you everything, even though you're a child, because we can't risk anything. Like, you can't say to somebody we're going to America or we're going on vacation, because if that got out, my parents would go to jail and we'd go to a foster home or something. So I understood everything. You know, we had to keep it quiet. And even when we were leaving, we had to leave on New Year's Eve, which is like the biggest holiday in Russia and Ukraine, at midnight, you know. So to kind of be like, oh, well, no one's going to make a life-changing like decision and leave their family and their whole life on New Year's Eve, you know. So we had to basically like jump several different trains and like pretend we're just going on vacation. Nobody could come say bye to us. Yeah.
So just to back it up real quick, because we didn't actually cover why you left.
Sure.
Your parents were political dissidents, from what I understand. It wasn't necessarily religious persecution.
No, it wasn't religious. My dad did not join the Communist Party, and so it would have been a lot harder for him to continue as an artist. And also, he just kind of saw that the political environment, the economic environment in the country was falling apart. Chernobyl had just happened a few years back. He just didn't see a future for his family there. And, you know, he was kind of right, because after we left, the whole, you know, the Soviet Union fell apart, major depression, everything. So for political reasons, we got asylum in the States, but we were not allowed to leave Ukraine or Soviet Union. So we had to find a way to get out of the country, and then once we got to the United States, we would be safe.
And I love that this is on your restaurant like biography.
Right. Yeah.
super cool. That you guys had like $300 on you and just like a suitcase each, just to make it look like you were just going on vacation.
Yeah, we had two, I think, suitcases, and my father rolled up his paintings. So we had like the big like painting roll, whatever. You know, we were like telling everybody that, oh, we're just going on Christmas or holiday vacation. We couldn't take anything else with us, so that it wouldn't look like we're going forever. Mm-hmm. And I remember like when the train was taking off from the train station in Kiev, it was like, it was like all gray and kind of snowing, and like all this old school trains taking off, and only like our cousin could come see us say goodbye. And as it's taking off, he starts running after the train.
It's, you know, like Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, it is, God. You know? And there's, like, flakes fall, like, snowflakes falling, and, like, I'm in the window, like, pressed against the window, and I just break down. I'm just, like, bawling. And my dad just grabs me and puts me in, the train car, and is like, don't cry. Don't cry. Like, be happy. We're going on vacation, you know?
Yeah. And your vacation was to New York City?
Well, we had several different visas to kind of throw off the scent, so, because we were being followed. So we had to, we were technically going to Paris for vacation, but we, got off the train in Germany, in Frankfurt, and like secretly got onto a different train to Berlin, where, there was an art collector who traded, plane tickets to New York City for my dad's paintings. Yeah, so we had to, like, and then we had other plane tickets to go into, like, Australia.
So your dad managed to orchestrate all of this ahead of time, and he had people in various places who were involved.
Yeah, absolutely. We had, I mean, very, very few people trying to help us, but we did have, you know, the art collector. We had somebody in France who, you know, kind of sponsored our visa, or, like, fake visa. You know, we had, like, a ex-KGB guy who was helping my parents kind of, like, be like, oh, like, I'll tell you the right time to go. Like, and it was literally in a matter of days. You know, he's like, okay, right now you're being watched, but, you know, a couple of days are going to go on vacation and you, you know, leave then. Like, basically picked up the phone and was like, okay, go.
It's totally insane to imagine that. And, you know, I'm glad you're sitting here with us now and everything worked out.
I want to see this movie.
It's like it's Dr. Zhivago meets A Story About the Underground Railroad.
It's so noir. With food involved. I love it.
So then you get to the U.S. How did you feel when you landed here?
Well, we got to the U.S. 3 days later. And we got to JFK, the airport, and, you know, we don't speak any English. We have this one piece of paper in an envelope and that we're guarding with our lives. So we get to immigration services, and they put us up in a refugee motel, which is, weirdly enough, just like half a mile from where Bear is now. It's crazy. So we were living in this motel off of Queens Boulevard, I think it is. For like 3 or 4 weeks with other refugees, and every day somebody would come and somebody else would go, because they would just find sponsors for you, because we didn't have family here or friends or a work visa. So they'd have to search the whole country and be like, well, they're Ukrainian, there's a Ukrainian community in Cleveland, will you take them? So that's basically kind of the beginnings of our story here.
And so you made it to Cleveland and kind of assimilated into
normal
U.S. life, but kept your roots in cooking your Ukrainian food. So, you know, obviously that kind of experience growing up made you love food.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we always cooked. Our family always cooked. Like, even like when I was a kid, I remember like going out to the farms and like getting a whole pig, and then my dad would butcher it, you know, or... I think I was, like, lucky in that way that everybody in my family was very, like, culinarily, I don't know, like...
inclined.
Yeah. I love food. I love to eat, and I think that really helped.
So you ended up going to the French Culinary Institute, which is now ICE, right? International... Mm-hmm. What is it? International
ICC.
Culinary
Center.
Yeah. Yes, one of our sponsors. Thank you so much.
Great school. Love
I did not go to cooking school. So I imagine that being like, this is not any offense to ICC. It's the idea of the chefism, and I think of it like basic training. Like it's a very, you know, structured kind of system. Do you have any like kind of intense stories from like knife class or something?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of intense stories. Like in the first few classes, you know, I was lucky enough to be there when the chefs could like yell at you and just curse you out.
Lucky enough.
Absolutely. I think that's very important, you know.
It's very French.
Yeah, and you know, like throw pans and just you know, just terrify everybody. So I mean, I can't think of any specific story right now, but at least two or three of our chefs would keep us after class, after like a 5-hour class, for another hour just to tell us that we're just worthless. But also very like kind of be like, but I know you can do it as long as you work harder. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, all the chefs that I had there are still my mentors. I still see them. I talk to them. You know, just like, I mean, besides like Jacques Pepin, there's all the chef instructors that were there that, you know, I still like, I'm still very close to them because of they put in so much, you know, energy into making me a better chef.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it like for you? I mean, you had probably been predominantly cooking your style of food, mm-hmm. Ukrainian, Russian food while you were living in Cleveland.
Yep.
Because like you said, you know, you were dropped into a very yeah. already Ukrainian culture, and I'm sure that that was like the majority of what you ate.
Yeah.
So what was it like to go to that, you know, to the Culinary Institute where they were doing yeah. French technique?
It was great. I mean, you know, we got to also travel as my father's an artist, so we got to travel with him to Paris and like Italy and England.
This
so
was after you moved to the U.S.?
After I moved to the U.S.,
there was that was safe. You were able to do that.
We could go to other countries. We just couldn't go back to Ukraine.
Okay.
Because we didn't have a path. That country didn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And we were on like the blacklist and stuff. You know.
Cool.
But so I was exposed to like, you know, French cooking, and I loved it. You know, I mean, plus the just having that technique and that base in culinary education was, I craved that, and I'm so happy that I got to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I want to take a break here and kind of delve into, you know, how you have taken everything that you've learned and put it into your restaurant okay. in Queens. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
You are listening to Bang Bang Sun by Iggy Dean on the heritageradionetwork.org.
We're back here on The Morning After. Sari and I have been talking to Natasha Porgobinski of Bear Restaurant in Queens. It's been a wild ride for her to get here, obviously. As she was saying, you know, she's a political refugee from Ukraine and made her way to Cleveland with the help of her father, obviously.
Right, right.
So, you know, you've been to the French Culinary Institute and you've taken what you've learned in your homeland. You know, what is your concept with Bear?
With Bear, it's we call it New European Cuisine, which is primarily Ukrainian and Russian food. But it's also, you know, it's seasonal and it's creative, and it's original. So, you know, the whole new European thing is that the borders have opened up and there's so much more kind of crossover of, you know, culinary techniques and food. So we don't necessarily just like cook Ukrainian food. So it's, you know, we try to just put out like the best, freshest, you know, dishes we can. It's a very limited, very focused menu. Everything's made by hand from scratch, and it's just me and my sous chef, so you're always getting, like, the best quality. It's not going to kind of shift from day to day.
Why Queens?
I guess by accident.
Well, you've seen the movie Coming to America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where they end up in Queens.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, I think maybe that's why. Yeah, exactly. It's just like destiny. I mean, you know.
I was going to ask that too. And like, as opposed to, you know, have you been to Greenpoint, Brooklyn? And like,
right.
Like talk about, why Queens as opposed to going to a place where that kind of food already existed in a community.
Well, you know, we weren't trying to cater to Eastern Europeans, you know. We just wanted to have a restaurant that puts out amazing food, and that's it, you know. So we didn't necessarily want to cater to Russians or Ukrainians. You know, we looked around everywhere, and, you know, just it happens that that's where we found a place that works for us. And it's a beautiful neighborhood. It's up and coming. And just we're the first ones there. We're the pioneers in that neighborhood. But I don't know. You know, I don't know why it happened. It wasn't on purpose that we were like, we have to do Queens or we have to do Brooklyn. But yeah, maybe just because that's where we ended up when we first got here. And ironically, that's where our first business is.
Yeah, it seemed like the opportunity. Yeah. It seemed like the right place. No,
there's something really lovely and nostalgic about that.
Yeah, yeah.
When we had the crew from Jeepney and Maharlika on the show quite a few months ago, they told us about what they call Lola Hour, which is mm-hmm. when all the like Filipino grandmas come and they go, "This is not Filipino." Do you have that kind of experience with the Russian Ukrainian ladies?
No, not really. You know, actually, because the only other place to go get really like Ukrainian or Russian food would be Brighton Beach, right. Mm-hmm. Which is really far away and it's not what it used to be. You can't get anything like that in the city, you know, really. So it's almost like a breath of fresh air for actual Russians and Ukrainians. Like, oh my God, now I don't have to go like all the way to Brighton Beach to get some veal dumplings or herring, you know.
Yeah.
So we actually
have you ever done one of those epic meals in Brighton Beach that just lasts hours and hours and hours with the dancing and the?
I haven't done that. Like the crazy, like the nightclubs. Or yeah. We do that on our own after hours. We just close down and drink all the vodka
we'll be
there
tonight.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Turn on the black light.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
Yeah. It gets pretty real.
Yeah. The thing starts in about like half hour or like half a bottle in. So whatever comes first. Yeah.
I know that when I first, you know, saw the name of the restaurant, I didn't understand it. I was like, mm-hmm. is this a Ukrainian thing? Is this a Russian yeah. thing? But it's kind of just your thing.
It's
a really cool story, though.
Yeah, so you want me to tell it?
Yes.
no, absolutely. It's actually, I grew up in Cleveland, and our parents are still there. We would go back and forth to visit them.
So your siblings?
Siblings, yeah. Sasha, who's the other owner and the like mixologist that creates all the crazy drinks. So we would go and visit our parents. And on I-80, going like mostly through Pennsylvania, every rest stop has these little wooden carvings of bears. And so we would just stop there, and everybody stops there and kind of just pets the bears for good luck or whatever, takes photos with them. It's totally a Pennsylvania like thing. And that's it. We were driving by one day and we were like, what are we going to call the restaurant? And just out of nowhere, Sasha was like, well, let's call it Bear. That was it. And we were basically at that Snowshoe, Pennsylvania rest stop.
Where the bear was kind of like a sense of comfort for
yeah,
you too.
Yeah. And, it's like, I guess a symbol of like the journey and how like everything for us is connected, New York and Cleveland and, you know, still, like, our heritage that is always kind of associated with bears.
So the, I was, you know, reading on your website about your tasting menu, and you do mm-hmm. kind of, like, a pre-ordered tasting menu or right. something that the guest has agreed upon ahead of time before they come in, correct?
Yes.
So what does that entail? And I feel like that's something that people are starting to do so that,
yes.
you know, you don't have to kind of yeah. make the change in the middle of service.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to brag a little bit, we just won Best Chef's Tasting by Village Voice.
Ooh, congratulations.
And thank yes. you. So basically, you know, you just agree to whatever I'm going to give you for your tasting menu.
So it's not really agreed upon with the guests? It's
no,
agreed upon with
no.
you.
Yes, exactly. you just say yes and indulge.
Let it happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not what our regular menu is. It's always something that I put together that night. Definitely caviar is involved, cured fish, smoked fish. Way more kind of elaborate and involved than the regular menu. It's about 8 to 10 courses, and it's served kind of a Russian style, so you'll get some courses will be like will come on the you know one after the other, and some courses will just all come at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you'll get like 3 or 4 courses at once on the table, and that's kind of like the Russian way to eat.
Yeah.
So what is involved? What is the idea with having that many items on the table at once?
Right. So the idea is that there's this thing called zakuski, which is like the Russian style appetizers, and that's like a set of 8 or 10 small plates. and you'll get your like deviled eggs with caviar, you'll get stewed mushrooms, you know, smoked meat. So the idea there is that you take ice cold shots of vodka and then you immediately chase it with a piece of like a small tapas. And that's definitely the most ideal way to enjoy kind of Russian food, because you get your fatty and smoky and salty and briny kind of all together. And it really works well with, like, if you're definitely, you know, pairing it with vodka cocktails or cold vodka.
Are you a vodka purist, or do you have any of the infused vodkas?
We do infused vodka. We have the St. Dill Martini and the Beatrice Martini, which is all vodka based. But me personally, definitely just ice cold shot.
Now, the idea of vodka pairing with food, it is beyond me. I feel like the food is the vehicle to allow you to just take another shot.
Yeah.
Like, is that kind of the mentality?
Yeah. Well, it's, we don't really see a lot of wine pairings in Russian cuisine. And wine was not very readily like available. For the
I don't
most
think
part.
Grapes grow very well either there. I don't know this, but...
No, it was, so mostly like when you would sit down at a table, you'd definitely have several bottles of vodka and maybe some wine or beer. That's what we want to do, is kind of introduce this way of eating and drinking where you don't get like smashed by drinking so much vodka. It's actually just, it brings out the flavors. It really makes you kind of like feel the intensity of all the food. And then the fattiness in the caviars and like the pork belly just kind of just dilutes the vodka in your system.
Yeah. I'm agreeing, because I had that experience. I went to Brighton Beach not too long ago and did kind of like one of those traditional, and I had never been one to just drink straight vodka and shots, ice cold.
I have.
Well, that's how.
No.
No, but I mean, not with food.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I've done the flavored vodkas more when I've gone, and I really enjoy that. But this time, you know, there was no flavored vodka. Mm-hmm. It was just straight up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going to drink too much. And I just found that like with every bite, I just, I craved it. And I don't know if it was psychological or mind over matter, or just something about like the coldness against the texture.
Yeah.
But it works.
And it works. Yeah,
yeah. I didn't believe it until I experienced it myself.
And also, like, you don't get filled up on beer or wine, and you can keep eating and drinking for a much longer time.
And staying very warm.
Yes, absolutely. And jolly.
So what is Bear doing for the holidays?
Well, we have a Christmas dinner. Three course dinner, and Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, we're doing a dinner. We used to do kind of big parties, but we haven't decided yet what we're doing. We might, but it's just, we're doing, you can reserve a seat, you get a bottle of wine and three course dinner. And
are there special dishes for the holidays?
We do a whole, Cornish hen, and we stuff that with apples and, nuts and, rosemary, garlic, the basic, like, nice French technique coming through there. We do, like, a pork loin with stewed cabbage and duck. We do a lot of whole roasted duck.
What's your website?
Website is www.bearnyc.com.
Thank you so much for being here, Natasha, and kind of schooling us on Ukrainian, Russian, new European cuisine.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So much fun.
Thank you, Natasha. That all sounds really good.
And now I 100% have a reason to go to Queens.
Tasting menu.
Yeah, absolutely. Come over anytime.
This is the start of a new world for me.
Caviar. Vodka.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the future.
Yep.
Sari, what are you doing for the holidays?
Well, being of a Jewish persuasion, I am probably going to be eating Chinese food. On Christmas Eve, my mom is coming into town.
What is that about? Is it just because it's open? Because obviously Bear is open on Christmas.
That's true. You know, there is some actual historical context to it. In a food and culture class I took, we did some scholarly research. And actually the Jews who first immigrated to New York first were based in the Lower East Side, and it was, you know, the poorest area that you could live in. So it was the Jews at the time, and Chinese, and also Italians. And the Italians were not as so welcoming to the Jews, as they were very, very Catholic. And the Chinese were actually a little bit less wealthy than the Jews. And so they were like, please come eat in our restaurants. So I think, you know, at the time, there was some similarities in terms of like the textures and the flavors. Jewish cuisine tends to be very kind of like mild and soft, and like a kreplach versus a wonton. A lot of like carrots and boiled vegetables like celery. And I think there was something about tasting other people's cuisine that felt very exotic and made them feel as if, you know,
it was a celebration too.
Yeah, and they were in a new place and trying new exotic cuisines. So historically, there is a context. Now, I don't know. I think because it's like really good and it's open and it's just kind of tradition.
No, it's great to have a tradition. I normally go home to Arizona for Christmas, being of a Christian persuasion, uh-huh. I guess, if you call it that. I just really like to, you know, celebrate things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this year, I'm staying in the city.
Nice.
Aaron and I have a giant tree. It's like 7 feet tall.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Certainly the biggest tree we've ever had. And I'm looking for a great place to do a tasting menu on Christmas Eve.
So, I think I might know.
Yeah. I think I might know a place. And then hopefully on Christmas Day, we'll just do like a lox and bagels, which is always a super weird thing to have for brunch.
Well, it's,
on Christmas
it's delicious
Day.
Every day of the
but
year.
It's, yeah, I could eat it every day of the year.
Yeah.
And then hopefully having a big dinner with crab legs or something like
oh
that.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, crab legs.
Well, we'll see what happens.
I'll be around if you need another guest.
100%. All right.
Well, my mom's coming in too, so we're going to be looking at... we're going to be doing those like holiday window things, because she really likes to do that. Hi,
like,
Mom.
Like go by Macy's?
And yeah.
I have seen the windows at Macy's.
Not Macy's. I mean, the Henry Bendel's really good. Barney's.
Okay, those are probably better. But the Macy's one, let me just tell you, that music that we played for the Yelp review,
uh-huh.
That's exactly it.
Like, yeah, you got to go like, a little more uptown.
It's like this little boy tripping. It's like he had his first, you know, ecstasy pill, and he's, or maybe MDMA, I don't know what it was, and he is just going.
I felt like I was tripping reading that review.
So did I. I kind of feel like going into a gluten coma after that.
Right now?
Let's do it.
Let's go raid some wholesale bakeries.
So we're going to be taking a couple weeks off here at the morning after just to celebrate and recoup. And we're going to come back.
Digest Chinese food.
Digest Chinese food for a couple weeks. You know, all
a
of
lot
that
of dim
stuff.
Sum.
So, thank you so much, Natasha, for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much. Love the show.
Wow. And no we matter,
will see you soon in Queens.
Absolutely.
Like tonight.
And no matter your religious persuasion, just have a happy holiday season and time off. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.